නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Okay, dear venerable brother, dear Dhamma friends, so actually we were discussing Samadhi Bhavana Sutta, which is available in the Anguttara Nikaya. So here actually Buddha talks about four types of concentrations. So the first one Buddha mentioned, if one develops, it leads to the dwelling happily in this very life. And the second one Buddha mentioned that if one develops that, it leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. The third one Buddha mentioned, if one develops that, then it will lead to development of the mindfulness and clear comprehension. And the fourth one Buddha mentioned, if one develops in such kind of a way, then it will lead to destruct all the taints. Now we discussed the first one very much basically. So the first one is Buddha mentioned, where if one develops that kind of a concentration, it leads to dwelling happily in this very life. Now these are the four jhanas Buddha mentioned. So as we discussed last time, so when we are developing concentration, we are basically concerned about developing five factors. That is vitakka, the applied mind; vichara, sustained mind; piti, the rapture; sukha, happiness; ekaggata, the concentration. So these are the five jhana factors, and these jhana factors actually we are trying to develop so that they will counteract with the hindrances. So we know that there are five hindrances, and those five hindrances are kamachanda, those are the sensual desire, and then ill will, that is what we call vyapada, tinamidda, sottantopa, vichikicha, the doubt, udachukukuccha, regret, and restlessness. Now these are the typical hindrances which typically overwhelming the power, overwhelming the mind, and first of all we need to abandon them, or at least we need to suppress them. Now in order to suppress them, we are developing those five jhana factors, or five concentration factors, and each one is actually interacting with the hindrance. Say for example, if we have continuous vitakka, that means again and again we are applying our mind to a particular primary object. So it will basically takes care of not allowing the mind to become lazy, lethargic. So therefore vitakka is quite opposite to laziness, or what we call as sotantopa, tinamidda. And when we apply our mind to a particular object, then we continuously observe it, very much like rubbing it. And then it is basically verifying, now this is the exact object that we want to observe. Now say when you are doing Anapanasati, if you clearly know this is the in-breath, this is not the out-breath, and this is the out-breath, this is not the in-breath. So likewise, you are quite certain about what you are doing, so then the possibility of arising doubt is not available. So vichara therefore is counteracting with doubt. And piti, on the other hand, prepare the mind in a more glad and more rapturous way, so that there is no possibility of arising ill will. And when the mind is having all these good qualities, so basically internally one may feel quite well, quite happy, contented. And as a result of that, there is no requirement for the mind to distract. Now, typically, why our mind get distracted is it is in search of some kind of a satisfaction from outside. Now, if internally one gain this satisfaction, if internally the satisfaction, happiness, contentment is available, then it doesn't need to go out, doesn't need to regret about the past or have uncertainties about the future. Rather, it can be happy in the present moment within in internal premises. So therefore, if one have this sukha, what we call happiness, sort of contented environment, then it is counteracting with regret and restlessness, that is Uddacha Kukkucha. And on the other hand, when the mind is quite one-pointed or fairly collected, fairly concentrated, so that is quite opposite to Kamachanda, sensual desire. So one aspect of sensual desire is jumping from one object to the other object. Whenever the mind gets bored, basically it will jump to another object, where again it is finding some satisfaction. If there also it finds something bored, again jump to another one. So likewise, this jumping nature, scattering nature, is the main feature of Kamachanda, sensual desire. But if one trains one's mind to fully concentrate on a selected object, so basically it is interacting or counteracting with the sensual desire. As a result of that, sensual desire is abandoned. Ekagata, the concentration, interacting with that. Now, if one is able to have all these five jhana factors developed, then one can say one is in the first jhana. So last time we discussed, basically when we are developing jhana, so there are many methods, like you can develop jhana, attain jhana using anapanasati, you can attain jhana using kasina, you can attain jhana using say metta meditation, mudita meditation, karuna meditation. So likewise, there are many methods are available, and therefore, even though we consider the jhana factors are there are certain other qualities sometimes add or sometimes change the quality of the jhana. As we discussed, when one is developing first jhana using anapanasati, most probably there may be a little equanimous kind of jhana. But on the other hand, if we consider attaining first jhana using metta, loving kindness, so the loving kindness automatically has its kind of loving nature. So as a result of that, internally one may feel more glad, internally one may feel more satisfied when one develops jhana using loving kindness. So likewise, depending on the approach that we are taking, the quality of the mind may vary. And again, on the other hand, there are various depths also we can talk. So anapanasati, if one develops to attain jhana, when one is applying the mind to the breath again and again, and all these jhana factors are fulfilled, one can say one is in first jhana. But on the other hand, as we develop concentration, there is a possibility of arising the anapanasati nimitta, what we call as the counterpart sign or the concentration sign. So when that is available and it is become more steady, one can abandon breath, and one can use that particular sign, which is more subtle, soft, as one's primary object. That can be used to attain jhana, and that would be more deep. So likewise, the depth of the jhana is also another factor that we can talk. Anyway, all these jhanas are providing fair amount of satisfaction, kind of blissful abiding. So that is why Buddha mentioned that concentrations are leading to have a happy life in this very life, happy dwelling in this very life. Now, there are certain dangers that we discussed last time, because if one attached to these jhanic states, ignoring the vipassana part, so that is then become a kind of a hindrance. On the other hand, if one is more addicted like to this jhana, so then the mind dwell in the jhanic state more in an attached, grasping manner. As a result of that, one's consciousness basically dwell, basically adhere to those jhana factors. Like we discussed in the Uddesa Vibhanga Sutta, so then the mind become more colored, more conditioned, using those qualities of the jhana. So the mind loses the mindfulness, but takes concentration as the dominant factor. So that is kind of a drawback when one is developing jhana. So one has to have this proper balance. So we know that there are five faculties that we are talking: saddha, viriya, sati, samadhi, panya. Saddha is the faith. Virya, the effort. Sati, mindfulness. Samadhi, concentration. Panya, wisdom. So basically it is necessary to have some sort of a equilibrium or kind of a balance among these five faculties. And if we want to keep any particular faculty in the front, that should be the mindfulness. So mindfulness has to be kept in front because it is the one basically monitoring the whole system. But if mindfulness is weaker, but the concentration comes to the front, then concentration overwhelms the person, and as a result of that, there could be certain consequences. Like one may feel certain overwhelming trance-like situations, and one may feel that one's head is sort of whirling, rotating, one's body is certain going through some uncontrollable kind of twisting or movements. So those kind of things are possible if the mindfulness is weaker but concentration is too much. So as a result of that, we need to know how to keep things under our purview. So that is where the mindfulness has to keep in the front as the dominant factor, and that is what mentioned in the Uddesha Vibhanga Sutta. Then one, even though one's mind is fairly concentrated, maybe in first jhana, second jhana, still one know what is exactly going on. Consciousness is not basically entangled or basically adhered to what we call to that particular jhanic qualities. Because these jhana qualities are fairly fascinating, fairly interesting. As a result of that, there's a higher possibility that we get attached to that, forgetting the mindfulness part, allowing concentration to overwhelm the whole body and the mind. So that is a kind of a drawback. And that has to be avoided. Basically, it may happen after some time. Because at the beginning, when we attain jhana, so it is so blissful and it will be a more interesting experience, elating experience. So as a result of that, usually the yogi may attach to that. Usually the yogi may go and dwell in that, allowing consciousness to basically establish in that state. But later, understanding Buddha's teaching, giving some prominence to mindfulness, one has to come out of it, but maintaining the sort of a distant, detached observation. Like we discuss, say, when we are doing walking practice, we allow the body to walk, but we, like an outsider, we can watch the walking process. Similarly, now here, the mind is concentrated, maybe in the first jhana, but still one can have this observing capacity. One can observe the whole process like a third person. Now this is what we have basically discussed. Now we can come to the second part, that is Buddha mentioned the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. Jnana dassana patilabhaya sangvattati. Now when typically jnana dassana patilabha, when we consider the Pali term, that basically relates to the knowledge and vision. But here, the commentary as well as the say, Sutta basically highlights, it is not the typical, wisdom-related skill that we are talking here. Rather, it is a concentration-related skill we are talking here. That is basically clairvoyance we are talking here. That is looking or seeing something which is not capable of seeing through the mundane eye. Now you know, if one is developing jhana, particularly after the fourth jhana, and again if one is mastering jhana, then there is a possibility of having this kind of a capacity, that is to see something very far away, something through the walls and something like that. So it's a kind of a psychic power, what we call as Dibba Chakku. So here Buddha mentioned, a bhikkhu attends to the perception of light. He focuses on the perception of day thus, as by day, so at night, as at night, so by day. So basically he has the capacity So look, to perceive day and night very similar. Now things are very much under his control. So his mind has the perception. During the night time also he can see like in the day. During the daytime, if you want, he can have the perception of night. So very much like the property of light, he has his own control. So this basically happens through the jhana power. That's why I mentioned, if one has to master jhana, one attains fourth jhana, and while being in the fourth jhana, one do various jhanic practices, going through ascending order, going through descending order, jumping from one jhana to the other jhana, and this like very much like a kind of a sport, and it's a kind of a lifetime training. It's a difficult task, so therefore nowadays it's very rarely that one can claim that one has such kind of a capacity, because it's a really tedious task. One has to attain all the four jhanas, and not only that, the fourth jhana actually relate to the other arupa jhanas, immaterial jhana, and those also has to be mastered. So altogether these eight jhanas have to be mastered. So that is not an easy task. So jhana mastery is a lifetime project in a way. So if one fulfill that, then there's a possibility that to have this kind of skill, which is a psychic skill. And Buddha mentioned, with a mind that is open and uncovered, he develops a mind imbued with luminosity. This is the development of concentration that leads to obtaining knowledge and vision. Now here, because of the available luminosity in the mind, now he can penetrate any kind of a wall or any kind of a solid thing. He can see through. On the other hand, if something is far away, using this luminosity of the mind, he can again see. And actually, sometimes this is attributed to the Chutupapata Jnana, where one can understand how another person, as a result of their own karma, how he is reborn in a particular place. If he has done wholesome karma, maybe he may be taking a wholesome birth in a celestial realm or human realm or in a more favorable situation. But on the other hand, if one has conducted unwholesome karma, as a result of that, he may take a sort of unwholesome birth. Now this, how this happens, one can understand, one can see how each person's arising, having taken birth, depending on this karma, through this Chutupapata Jnana. So the Chutupapata Jnana is also attributed to this Dibba Chakku. So these two seems going together. And therefore in Dhamma, that is also considered as a psychic power. And that also may be possible using this. So all these are actually depending on the mastery of Jhana. Here it is, we are not talking about any Vipassana. Rather, it is completely on Samatha meditation. As we discussed, one has to abandon hindrances, has to attain first Jhana, sort of dwell in that fair amount of time. Later, he has to master first Jhana. Then say he is attaining second jhana, master second jhana, he is attaining third jhana, master third jhana, attaining fourth jhana, master fourth jhana, attaining all the other arupa jhanas, master them. And now he has to do all different kinds of exercises, mastering all these eight jhana. It's a kind of a tedious process. As I mentioned, very rarely monks and nuns or any person would do it today. But there may be rare cases which they have a certain extraordinary skills to do this. As a result of that, they can easily train one's mind when one attains jhana, and sort of have the potential to look through, have the potential to see through maybe some solid objects, see through very far places, and maybe see how one getting the birth depending on one's karma. So these are somewhat or extraordinary skills that one can develop. Now this is the second type of concentration that Buddha mentioned in this Samadhi Bhavana Sutta. Now we can get on to the third one. Here in the third one, Buddha mentioned, and what is the development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and clear comprehension? Now we know about mindfulness. Now basically, one may start developing mindfulness. So it is not the concentration one can immediately develop, rather the mindfulness well developed can easily attach with concentration, can easily lead to concentration. Say if we consider a little bit of development of mindfulness, say you are, if you consider your situation of the mind, it constantly jump from past to the future. We rarely live in the present moment. There are various incidents happened in the past. We are thinking about them, regretting about them, maybe worrying about them. On the other hand, say we have a lot of plans about the future. As a result of that, we are thinking about them, planning, designing, fantasizing. So many things are there. So always if we consider our mind, either live in the past or in the future. But we need to train the mind to live in the present moment. So that is where we use our body, because body is constantly living in the present moment. And certain bodily processes like breathing, rising and falling, bodily posture, all these actually we can use in order to sustain our attention in the present moment. As a result of that, slowly the quality of mindfulness would develop. So once the quality of mindfulness is there, now drifting to the past or to the future become less and less. And even if mind get distracted, it may quickly come back. So that is something that one need to experience. Now even though I am talking here, so you need to practically experience these things. We can talk this in within few minutes, but it's years of practice. So it may take long time, because there is no any instant method. Rather, we have to slowly develop these skills. And when we train ourselves, then we can say, okay, even mind get distracted occasionally, it may quickly come back, it may quickly return. But in the previous cases, previous situation, say mind get distracted and we are fully obsessed with thinking, and very rarely we come to the present moment. Either live in the past or future. But now once we train, it may start living in the present moment as much as possible. And even if it get distracted, it may return quickly. Now there are various methods to develop mindfulness. We already discussed these things in the Satipatthana Sutta. And when developed, now we understand, okay, there is a quality called mindfulness within the mind. While I am walking, I can be mindful. While I am eating, I can be mindful. While I am brushing the teeth, I can be mindful. While I am wearing my clothes, I can be mindful. So likewise, we can be aware each and every activity, what we are doing. And we need to train like that. So when we develop mindfulness like that, then Buddha asks us to clearly comprehend what we are being mindful. Say for example, if we are mindful about breath, now we know this is in breath, this is out breath, this is in breath, this is out breath. So likewise we train. Later, we need to examine certain qualities of the in breath, how we can differentiate in breath and out breath. So that leads to the clear comprehension. So we need to arouse that skill within the mind. Sometimes mind may not be interested of looking all these subtle qualities. It would be a little tiresome. As a result of that, mind may simply like to dwell in the concentrated state rather than examining, rather than investigating. So this investigation part we need to purposely very much like initiate. So once this initiation has done, then it may become a kind of a skill of the mind. Whatever happens, it may start closely observe, closely examine. But as I mentioned, we need to initially, very much like purposely initiate this skill. When in-breath is available, we need to carefully examine how it begins and what is the middle, how it ends. whether it is warm, whether it is cool, whether it is long, whether it is short. So all these can be perceived only when we are closely examining it. Similarly, if we consider the out-breath, so there also one needs to examine it, then only one can understand, okay, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end. And this may be comparatively may be warmer, comparatively may be longer or shorter, and it may touch us exactly at this particular place. So likewise, all this subtle information is available only if we do the close examination. So this close examination leads to clear comprehension. Now Buddha encourages us to do this. So that is why in many suttas, like Anapanasati Sutta, Buddha didn't stop at the very establishment of mindfulness. Rather, he encouraged us to closely examine. As a result of that, we know, okay, this is long, this is short, this is the beginning, this is the middle, this is the end, this is a complete cycle. This is the beginning of the in-breath, this is the middle of the in-breath, this is the end of the in-breath, there's a little gap. This is the beginning of the out-breath, this is the middle of the out-breath, this is the end of the out-breath. Again, there's a little gap. Now again, the beginning of the in-breath. So likewise, the complete cycle, one can comprehend only when one pay close attention. Now these things have to be developed. And Buddha mentioned, here a bhikkhu knows feelings as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. Now, when this clear comprehension is fairly developed, now you can use that skill to many places. It is not that you only can do it for the breathing, but many, many areas you can utilize. Say, if you are practicing walking meditation, so you exactly know, okay, this is the left leg, this is the right leg. Then you know this is the beginning of the lifting, now in the middle of the moving. Now that is the placing. So you know distinctly these different phases of the walking. And even if it is touching the ground, you know where it is exactly touching. And what are the qualities or characteristics available. So each and every element characteristic, you can know only if you are doing this investigation part. Say if your left foot is touching the ground, you should know, okay, whether that is the hardness, this is the softness, this is the lightness, this is smoothness, this is heaviness, this is roughness, this heat, this is cold. So likewise, all these different subtle characteristics, one can know only when a fair amount of clear comprehension is available. So when clear comprehension is available, developed like that, you can use that skill to many other places. Say you are practicing elements meditation, then you know exactly what are the element characteristics present. Because basically that is beyond our control, in the sense, I mean, we don't know exactly what is going to happen. But we can be fully aware what is happening right now. So it is unpredictable what is going to happen. That is why it is basically non-self. And when it is happening, we know exactly this is what exactly has happened. Because we are fully aware, and at the same time we have the ability to exactly focus our mind to each and every phenomena, each and every characteristic. As a result of that, we know exactly, okay, this is the exact quality which is available. It may be the hardness, it may be the softness, it may be the beginning of the hardness, middle of the hardness, end of the hardness. This is the arising of the hardness, this is the passing away of the hardness. So likewise, you can clearly know the full picture. Suppose you are putting this ability to the Vedana Anupassana. So different types of feelings you can recognize. Okay, this is the pressurable feeling, this is a painful feeling, this is an equanimous feeling. So you can distinctly recognize what exactly the type of the feeling. And when you know that, suppose you know now there is a pressurable feeling. So you can recognize, okay, this is the now only it is arising, now it is available, now there is a kind of a pressure available, pressurable feeling available. So you know that. Now it is fading away. Now you still, you know exactly while you are doing the observation, you know the ups and downs of the pressurable feeling, how the intensity varies, you know. Now this is where the clear comprehension further improves. Now, at the beginning, you may establish clear comprehension using Anapanasati, for example. But later, when you are applying that skill to observe, say, Vedana Anupassana, to observe various different kinds of feelings, now, as a result of that, further these kind of skills further sharpens. Again and again, you are applying your mind, recognizing whether it is the beginning, the middle, the end, whether it is the arising part, whether it is the ending part, what exactly the type of the feeling, then the mindfulness further sharpens. Now, as a result of that, probably the yogi may understand it is not exactly a single feeling which is operating, it may be a collection of minute feelings. Now, that is another aspect of clear comprehension, where you are able to experience you are able to clearly comprehend with all the details, all the subtle details. Actually, when we consider a pleasurable feeling, it appears like it lasts for about 10 minutes, 5 minutes, etc. But if you closely examine, you may know it is not the same single kind of feeling which is existing all this time. Rather, many, many subtle, minute feelings are arising as a group. They instantly arise and pass away. Another one arises and it also pass away. Another one arises, it also pass away. So likewise, it's a kind of a collection of minute feelings. So this kind of a very clear, very precise observation is possible only when clear comprehension is very high. So these things have to be developed. So that's why, Buddha mentioned again and again, the development of concentration. It is not that immediately we may have this kind of a skill, but again and again when we are applying our mind, then these skills are going to be developed. It's like sharpening a blunt knife. So if the knife is not sharp, then again and again we need to sharpen it. Say about 100 times, 200 times, when we do that, then only it becomes really sharp. Similarly, our mind also, at the beginning it may not be capable of doing all this, but later, as a result of the development, it may be capable of recognizing all these subtle aspects. Now, Buddha explains here few things, like how one may apply to feelings and what would be the picture. If one apply to feelings, he may understand, okay, there are different types of feelings, pleasurable feelings, painful feelings, and equanimous feelings. And again, even though it's a painful feeling, it may has certain qualities. The intensity may vary. And again, it may has a collection of feelings. And similarly, the collection of feelings in the, pleasurable feelings. Similarly, in the equanimous feelings. So likewise, many interesting information may be available as you are moving forward. And as a result of that, now one can know how each minute feeling may arise, how instantly it passes away. Feelings as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. So altogether, appear like it's a pleasurable feeling. You know exactly how it is arising and how it present and how the whole thing passes away. At the same time, you can clearly comprehend it consists of a series of minute feelings and how each and every minute feeling arises and quickly pass away. Similarly, Buddha mentioned this to the perceptions. As they arise, as they present, as they disappear. So one may keep one's attention on the mind, and time to time there may be various perceptions happening in the mind. Say you are trying to keep your mind empty. At that time, suppose you are getting a little mental image about your son, about your daughter, about your mother, about your father, whatever it is. So that's a simple mental image. We can say a rupa sanya, a perception derived from a form. But typically what happens is that we attribute a person to it. Oh, this is my son. This is my daughter. This is my mom. this is my father. So likewise, we immediately attribute a person to that. If we are not doing it, trying to recognize it as a mere perception, mere sign, then we are in a different, say, kind of a paradigm shift. Previously, we are very much like trapped in the perceptions, we being carried away by the perceptions. We are always attributing a person to the perceptions. As a result of that, we being start thinking, proliferating. But later, if we have a clear comprehension, then we can know exactly it is not a person. It is simply a mental image. So we can keep it as it is without attributing a person to that, without being carried away by that perception, without getting attracted to that perception, without getting rejected or repelled by that perception. So we can exactly know, okay, in the mind, there's a perception arising. Now it remains, now it passing away. Now we are the ones feeding the perception. So there may be a little perception arising in the mind, but we make it kind of a strong one. We are pumping a lot of energy, we are feeding that. Then the perception is growing, and ultimately it becomes a completely different thing, which is not the one actually arisen. At the beginning, what is arisen is a very slight perception, very small one. But we add so much of things to that, we do a lot of fabrications. As a result of that, this perception becomes an entirely different perception. And sometimes we call it as sanya vipallasa, perversions. We are getting to perversions of the perception. What we have, what we comprehend is not the reality. The completely distorted view we are going to have. So these are very constantly happening in our mind. So only through vipassana, when one's mind is capable of recognizing all these subtle aspects, then one can understand all these subtle points. Otherwise, we simply habitually do all these things. We don't know even. When an image happens, immediately we attribute to our son, to our mother, to our father, and we start loving, we start calling, we start writing, we start talking, and we are trapped in the whole situation. But if you have mindfulness, if you have clear comprehension, now you are in guard, you are quite vigilant, and you know exactly what is happening in the mind. The mind was clear, but now a mental image appears in the mind. Now you know exactly, it is not my mother, it is not my father, it is not my son, it is not my daughter, it is a mental image. So you are keeping that in that level. You are capable of looking at it objectively. As a result of that, you are not feeding it. Now you know it is now fading away. Instead of developing, multiplying, now it starts fading away. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, if one have this kind of exercise again and again, it gets sharpened. At the beginning, it is true that you may get sometimes carried away. But slowly, as you are continuing your practice, now you become capable of handling it properly. When there are mental images happier, you can keep them as mental images. You can recognize them as mental images without getting carried away by them. And then Buddha mentioned, he knows thoughts as they arise, as they remain present, as they disappear. That is the other part. Now we discuss about the perception part, sanya, and now Buddha talks about the thoughts, that is sankhara. Now, when thoughts are there, the same thing happens typically. We can't recognize them as thoughts, we consider them as the reality, we consider them as, but we need to immediately act upon them, and then we start jumping, we start reacting, we start talking, we start writing, we start fighting, all these things are there. But if we consider carefully, what is arisen is simply a thought. So, looking at thought as a thought is therefore extremely important. So one can't do it immediately unless one has mindfulness and clear comprehension. Probably you can remember in Anapanasati Sutta, when it comes to Chittanupassana, Buddha makes a kind of a categorical statement. Buddha mentioned, Naham bhikkhave muttasatissa asampajanasa anapanasati bhavanam vadami. Monks, I am not recommending this anapanasati meditation, particularly this Chittanupassana part, for the person who is lack of mindfulness and clear comprehension. Now, in order to do Chittanupassana, so it's a must to have mindfulness and clear comprehension. That's why, I mean, no point of immediately trying Chittanupassana if one doesn't have enough mindfulness, enough clear comprehension. Then what happens is immediately you being carried away by thoughts. Because thoughts have more attractive nature, more deluded nature, delusive nature, and as a result of that, when we are trying to look at them, unfortunately we start feeding them, providing them strength, and ultimately we start thinking, and ultimately we will be in a complete obsessive thinking, maybe in the mental proliferation. We again and again get caught to this mental proliferation because we don't have mindfulness and clear comprehension. But when one develops mindfulness and clear comprehension using all those simple techniques like anapanasati, rising and falling, maybe maintaining mindfulness at various daily mundane activities, walking meditation, etc. So then you are developing this skill. You are developing mindfulness. You are developing concentration. You are developing clear comprehension. Now later, you start watching the mind naturally. It is not that your teacher might ask you to watch your mind, but typically that may start. As you develop mindfulness and clear comprehension to fair extent, automatically, naturally, your mind may tend to look at it itself. What are the thoughts arising? Are there lustful thoughts? Are there, say, thoughts of ill will? Are there, jealousy thoughts? Is the mind restless? Is the mind regretting? Is the mind full of doubts? So likewise, you start looking at the mind objectively without being carried away by those thoughts. So that skill has to be further and further developed. Then one may have the skill to look at each and every thought. Previously, you may look at it as a kind of a bundle. So there may be, say, 10-15 thoughts together, and altogether you may feel like, okay, this is a lustful thought. There may be 10-15 thoughts together and you feel like, okay, this is an angry thought. But as you further develop your mindfulness and clear comprehension, you know it's not a single thought, it's a series of thoughts arising one after the other, supporting each and everyone. It's appear like a bundle. Now you can disintegrate them. You can sort of disentangle the whole thing. Now you may be capable of looking at one thought, after another thought, as a series of thoughts. So this is how the clear comprehension improves. So Buddha mentioned, knows thoughts as they arise, as they remain present, and as they disappear. So this is a kind of a skill one has to develop. And then Buddha mentioned development of concentration that leads to mindfulness and a clear comprehension. This is the development of the concentration which is leading to mindfulness and clear comprehension. Now actually, if one develops this, Buddha mentioned he can become a Saddhanusari, he can become a Dhammanusari, and he can ultimately become a Sotapanna at this level. Actually, that is not in this sutta. That is in another sutta in the Sanguttara Nikaya. So Buddha mentioned, so when he talks about different aggregates, this is impermanent. Each and every aggregate is impermanent. So a Saddhanusari person, the person who is with a lot of faith, he start believing it. As a result of that, he has a lot of faith. He believes, okay, yes, it is the truth. So this particular forms are quite impermanent. So he starts having kind of a faith on it. Later, he clearly see that. He himself can verify that. Then only he can become a Sotapanna. On the other hand, Dhammanusari's person, Buddha mentioned, Panyaya Matasso Nijjhanam Khamanti. So that is where, so he logically comprehend. So Buddha has mentioned some dhamma and he reads it, he may listen to that, and now he reflect about it. Now he logically think about it. As a result of that, he get a lot of confidence. Okay, yes, it is true. But he himself haven't experienced it yet. Later he himself experience it, then he becomes a sotapanna. So therefore this perception of impermanence, what we have discussed in this third type of concentration, is very much like the very basic kind of insight that one can develop. So that's the very beginning of insight practice, we can say, insight knowledges, we can say. Most probably the insight knowledges when one start developing, so this is the one going to happen. So he may understand how impermanent things are, how quickly things arise and pass away. So it may be different things. It may be feelings, it may be perceptions, it may be thoughts, it may be bodily phenomena. So likewise, many things are possible. And as a result of that, now he himself start recognizing it. He himself start experiencing it. So anicca sanya, the perception of impermanence is now developing within himself. Now slowly this can lead to the level of even become a sotapanna. But that alone is not necessary, not enough. That's why Buddha talks about the fourth type of concentration that we'll discuss in another time. So with that, I like to conclude today's sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions.
Thank you, Bhante. To participate in the Q&A, you can raise your hand or you can also send your questions via the chat. So, honey, you may unmute.
Sarangai. Thank you, Jennifer. Avasarai
Bhante.
My question is actually it's a clarification. So, basically, when sanya or perceptions become sort of you start building on that, it becomes sanya vipallasa or a perversion of the sign. Now, is that the same as sankhara?
No. Actually, sankhara may also support, definitely, because it is not immediately that the say perceptions alone can make the perversion. So actually there is a significant support coming from sankhara, but typically what we say, as a result of all this combination, ultimately we have a kind of a internal perception. It's kind of a preconceived idea now available within the mind. Okay, things are permanent. Things may give us satisfaction. So there is I here, there is a person here, and this is very beautiful. So likewise, we get into perversions and then it become kind of a deeply rooted perception in oneself. So that is why, I mean, it talks about three levels: sanya vipallasa, citta vipallasa, and then ditta vipallasa. At the very root is the sanya vipallasa. So as I mentioned, say, assume that there's a mental image appearing in the mind. Now you attribute a person to that and you start looking at it, you start thinking about it, and then you consider, okay, he's really a good person, he's an attractive person, he's a lovable person. Now later, again and again, when you are doing that, now that kind of a perception start deeply rooted. Immediately now that perception is very much inculcated in your mind, deeply ingrained in your mind. Next time when you look at him, okay, you immediately jump to the conclusion he's a good person. That preconceived idea may immediately come to the front. So it may be a perversion happening in the mind. So similarly, say when things we consider things as permanent, things as really beautiful, things may provide us enough satisfaction. And so likewise, there's a deeply rooted perception now we have, and it's a kind of a perversion. And later, more and more we think about like that. So at the mind level, mind also constantly operating in that direction, very much like mind has now conditioned into looking at in that angle. So if you like a particular person, okay, immediately you start developing that thought of that kind of thoughts. If you don't like a particular person, okay, the mind is now fairly conditioned, okay, now similar thoughts may start arising in the mind. Now when it becomes to ditti vipallasa, Buddha mentioned, okay, very much like fixed now, you can't change it now, very much like your mind is deeply rooted, completely conditioned, and no one can even change it. So it may start with a small perception, wrong perception, may develop to the thought level. Now even thoughts are operating in the same direction, and ultimately mind becomes fully conditioned, fully fixed into a particular way of operating.
Yeah. Sadhu. Thank you, Dr. Ramasamy.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I'd like
to invite you to
the
next question.
Yeah, thank you, Jennifer. Now, Bhante, you spoke about mental images. Now, does that mean that you're actually seeing that in your mind, like the image of a man or a woman or an inanimate object, do you actually see that object?
Yeah, when we consider the mental image, that is what we typically refer, but it doesn't mean only the image. Now, when Buddha talks about sanya, Buddha talks about six categories. Say that is rupa sanya, saddha sanya, gandha sanya, rasa sanya, pottabha sanya, and dhamma sanya. So it's a kind of a vast spectrum we are talking here. So it is not only the mental, when we talk about mental image, so it is true that we immediately get the perception, idea that it may be a kind of a figure. But still, you have a kind of a figure about a particular taste. So you know exactly this is the salty, this is bitter, this is sugary. Likewise, you already have that kind of a perception. So those sanya are already available in the mind. And say, if you have a particular fragrance, okay, you know exactly, okay, this is the fragrance of a rose flower, this is the fragrance of a lotus flower. So likewise, even if your eyes are closed, if someone is taking different types of flowers closer to your nose, probably you can recognize.
Mm.
So all these comes under the category of perceptions, signs. So, using which we do the recognition.
Mm-hmm.
It is not always, it is not, it is not always necessary to have a mental image, but it is easy to explain it using a mental image.
Mm-hmm. Because it can come through a smell or a sound or whatever, right?
Yes, yes.
And it can also at the same time, the thoughts also can come at the same time, isn't it? Because it's a very fast sort of occurring thing. Would that be right if I said that?
Yes, because actually, these five aggregates are working together. For our easy understanding, for easy sort of distinct knowing each and every part, we are dividing the whole experience to five parts. But they are internally operating, internally interlinked, we can say. So when the mental image is available, there immediately the thought is also available. The thought consists of mental image, being supported by a mental image. And say it has been derived from something we have already seen, for example. So it has some contribution coming from the form. And now immediately consider is my son, for example. Okay, now there's a kind of a pleasurable feeling, maybe. You feel pleasant, you feel happy. The feeling part is also there. And now you recognize, okay, he is my son. Now the consciousness part is also there. Now all these five aggregates quickly working together and give us kind of a perception.
Yes, and then the mental proliferation can start, right?
Yes, yes.
Then you also went on to say, when you were talking about the jhanas, the vitakavichara, You said Preeti counter effects the ill will, and the Sukha the regret and restlessness, and the Ekagata the Kamachan, the sensual desire.
Yeah.
Now I miss the Vitakka and Vichara. What do they counteract?
Yeah, Vitakka.
What do they counteract anything?
Yeah. Vitakka means again and again we need to apply our mind. Say for example, if we are using breath as our meditation object, so breath happens again and again. In breath happens, out breath happens, in breath happens, out breath happens. So it's a continuous process. So mind doesn't have time to rest. So always it has to get activated. So as a result of that, it is counteracting with sloth and torpor.
Yeah, right. And then the vichara?
Vichara, actually, that particular object, he has to, verify. Okay, this is the in-breath. He very, very sure, this is not the out-breath. He's quite sure now this is the in-breath, not the out-breath. So, basically, that kind of an assurance, quite sure about the particular thing, is counteracting with the doubt. So doubt is kind of an uncertainty, whether it is in-breath or out-breath or this is the beginning or end or... So that kind of uncertainty is there with the doubt. But here when you exactly know, okay, this is the beginning, okay, this is the middle, this is the end, this is exactly the in-breath, this is exactly the out-breath. Now there is no possibility of arising doubt.
And you also went on to say that we first sort of concentrate on the in-breath, out-breath, and then we get these jhanic factors coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then if I understood, that's why I want to just verify, that we can drop the breath and go into these factors. Did I understand that correctly?
No, actually, that's why I discuss. So one can maintain one's attention continuously with the breath, and one can arouse all these jhana factors and they are fairly available, and one can say, okay, now I am in first jhana. But on the other hand, there's another way of going to jhana using another approach rather than going through the breath. So at the first we are using breath to develop concentration, to develop mindfulness. Later it will produce the nimitta, concentration sign. It may appear like it may appear like a cloud, it may appear like a moon, or it may appear like a light. So then when it becomes stabilized, quite available, quite stable, now you can ignore breath. Now you can ignore breath and simply pay attention to that particular sign. So that sign is more and more a subtle object, even subtler than the breath. Now, if one attains jhana using that, it becomes more blissful and, more deep.
I see. And the other question I want to ask you was, when the body becomes, very, very comfortable, can we just switch on to that comfort, or that's not our advice?
No, actually, if you start looking at comfort as comfort, if you start investigating comfort, now you are not in samatha, but in vipassana.
You have switched to right.
So that is where
that's not difficult.
No, not at all. Not difficult. And again, that is the advice of the Buddha. Rather than being trapped in the experience, rather than being overwhelmed by the experience, how one can objectively look at it. You come out of the experience, you take a step back, and now you closely examining what is going on. Now this is a rupturous experience, now it is changing, okay, now it is disappearing, now another place, rupturous experience arising. So likewise, you look at the whole thing, you closely examining the whole thing, rather than being trapped in it. So that is why Buddha mentioned Piti Patisangvedi Asa Sissamiti Sikkati, Sukha Patisangvedi Asa Sissamiti Sikkati. So you know exactly, now there is a rupture and you know. And when now there is a happiness and you know. You are not being carried away by that and you are not being trapped in it. Your consciousness is not deeply adhered to that. You have the capacity to examine it, investigate it.
Yes. Yeah, then when you are doing all those things, you have moved to the Vipassana anyway, is the advantage.
Yes, yes,
if
yes.
If you are looking at the breath, the middle, the beginning and the end, then you have already gone into Vipassana.
Yeah, we can say. Exactly. So actually from
so
this...
So then you're...
Actually now,
sorry,
when... Yeah,
carry on.
Yeah, when Buddha talks about these four types of samadhi, the very first two are purely on samatha. The other two are on vipassana. So we
yes.
only discuss...
But he still talks of the second and third jhana, no? Even though we are doing all that.
Jhana, we already discussed all the jhanas fairly. We discussed
yes.
in the under the first category. Now on the second
yes.
second
category. Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. The second category
yeah.
we discuss. If one is capable of mastering jhana, then he can go to the psychic powers, and that is the second type. The third type is actually where mindfulness and clear comprehension is available, not only the concentration. Now that is one can even take to the level of sotapanna.
Yes. Yes. Now, I have written some notes here. Obviously, I had somebody else have done it, and I have written a note here in the second type of thing where we get knowledge and vision. I have put here, this is not yatha bhuta nana dasana. So, what is the difference between the knowledge and vision and yatha bhuta nana dasana? I want to do it another time.
Yeah, no, actually, that's why I mentioned. Now, typically, when we consider knowledge and vision, that is the Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana. But here, according to the commentary and according to the, say, Sutta, how it evolves, it is not the
yes.
Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana mentioned here. So, it is mentioned here particularly related to the luminosity of the mind, the ability to look at even during the night, like in the day. Even during the daytime, like in the night. So likewise, it's a different skill that one is developing, not really the that you are looking at things in a more, realistic manner. Now, this is kind of a different skill that is being developed based on the jhanic practice. And that is where it is attributed to clairvoyance or dibba chakku.
Yes.
So dibba chakku, not the yathabhuta jnana dasana that we are talking in the vipassana.
So that yathabhuta nana dasana is really related to vipassana. Vipassana, we are actually investigating, right?
Exactly.
We are investigating and going deeper.
Yes, yes, yes. But here in the second type of concentration, here it is mentioned more into the samatha part, that is into dibba
yes.
chakku. That's a psychic power.
That is mindfulness and clear comprehension.
No, that is the third part.
Oh, sorry, that's the third part, yes. So the second one, the knowledge and vision, is related to psychic power and clairvoyance, right?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay, Bhante, I think I got that one. It's very interesting, isn't it, Bhante?
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'll return the Kumidini to the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. And
we can't hear you now.
Kumidini, you can try to mute again.
Are you okay now? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you, Jennifer and Bhante. Thank you for your interesting talk today. My question is, at the beginning you were talking about the jhanas achieved by anapana and metta and several ways. But I want to ask you about jhanas achieved from the vipassana way.
Mm-mm.
Can you never mentioned that.
Yeah, yeah. I'm keeping it for the next session because on the next session, actually, based on how one may develop concentration which is capable of removing the taints. So vipassana knowledges, okay. The vipassana that is purely on vipassana. So there I thought of discussing about vipassana jhana.
So that is to come.
Yes, yes, okay, yes,
good.
Yes.
I look forward to that. But I have another question, not related to today's topic, but something that has been we have been talking about, but I haven't had a good comprehension of it. We, you know, there are the three asava, like bhava,
kamasava, bhavasava,
bhavasava,
avijjasava, avijjasava. Right.
What is vipavatanna?
Yeah. Now suppose you are in a traffic jam. Now you are going through the road and immediately you got up with the traffic jam. Now you immediately get a kind of sort of a reaction, okay, how can I get rid of it? When this is going to finish? Now there's a deep desire arising within you to come out of it. Now this is a kind of a vibhava tanha. So you are rejecting the present moment experience and you want to abandon it. It's a kind of a forceful desire arising, refusing the present moment experience.
And it was explained to me by another monk as not wanting to be born.
Yeah, so now that's why. Now, when we consider vibhava tanha in the more slight way, applying to the momentary experience, so that is where we want to get rid of the present moment experience. Later, you can expand it, okay, you are going through a particular job. It is not just momentary experience. You have to do it for many years. Now you can have an inner desire. Okay, I want to get rid of this job. I want to find a new job. Now that is also vibhava tanha. And say you are hating your life, present life now. And you want to have a much better life. I hate this life. I want to become a celestial being. I want to become this. I want to become that. So the becoming part is also there. That is the bhava tanha. But hating the present experience, either it may be a very slight, very narrow duration, or it may be a longer duration, everything is basically on vibhava tanha. So ultimately one can say, you don't want to exist in the present life. You are refusing the present life, bhava, but you may want to have a different life.
That was not at all what this monk was saying. He said bhava tanha is to be, you know, enjoying the present life and wanting more of it. The other one is like in India or even here, they believe that after this life there is no other life.
One can argue actually the bhava tanha is attributed to the what you call Shastratavada, and vibhava tanha is attributed to Uchedavada. So that is why they usually talk like that, because bhava tanha is always wanted to become. Okay, you want to become a good person, you want to become a rich person, you want to become a higher person. So likewise, the desiring part to become. So that is basically, it's a kind of a underneath belief is that you can have a continuation long time, and again and again you can get into new and new blissful or wonderful experiences. So therefore it is more towards the Shastrata Ditti, thinking that the life is eternal. But on the other hand, the vibhava tanha, now you are refusing the present. Present experience you are refusing and you want to terminate it. Then it can lead to the Uccheda Ditti.
So it has nothing to do with wanting to commit suicide or anything like that.
Even that is possible. Yeah, even that is possible, because the Uccheda Ditti basically does not believe of rebirth and even karma. It doesn't believe. So one can even commit suicide because he want to refuse. He is a complete refusal of the present life.
One other point that I wanted to ask you, Bhante, now this disillusion of, you know, like what is this called, what is the term for it in Pali? You know, when you...
Bhanga? Bhanga jnana?
Not the Bhanga jnana, it says that you get, like you don't enjoy the things that you used to enjoy.
Nibbida.
What is that term called? I can't remember.
Is that Nibbida?
Nibbida, that's it.
Uh-huh.
Nibbida, that has anything to do with this?
No, actually...
That's what that's
about. Yeah. So, Nibbida is based on the vipassana. Now, when we consider bhavatanha and vibhavatanha, they are very much like naturally available, deeply rooted conditioning of the mind. But Nibbida is something different. Now, when you are having mindfulness, clear comprehension, concentration, now you do a close examination of all the different phenomena, fair amount of phenomena, and as a result of that, you get that clear vision. You start to understand the reality of the things. And now you know, I mean, they are not permanent. Now you know they can't bring you satisfaction. And you know exactly they are not under your control. Now you get kind of a dispassion, kind of a disenchantment, and that is what is called Nibbida, which is always based on the true knowledge, based on the seeing things as they truly are. The knowledge has to be very much one of the very important, strong, supportive factor for the arising of Nibbida.
But that Nibbida creates a bit of an issue, doesn't it?
It can.
With the problematic for me.
Yeah, it can. That's why you need to carefully manage it. So you can't, I mean, the point is, now, no point of, now say you see that things are impermanent. You see that things are beyond your control. So no point, I mean, can't give you enough satisfaction. Now, as a result of that, you feel kind of disenchanted. Nibbida. Now, what is the solution? So is it the solution, the committing suicide? Or is it the solution?
I'm just
exaggerating the situation and telling you. So basically, you may now start looking at various options. So either say, now certain things happen. Now say, for example, if a monk is developing vipassana, as a result of Nibbida, he might now considering, okay, I better leave the monastery. I better disrobe. I better change the monastery, I better change the teacher, I better change the technique. Because all these are wrong decisions one might take because of inability to understand Nibbida. Now, when Nibbida arising, it's a matter of simply continuing the process, just continuing one's practice, now slowly. So your mind may slowly understand all the conditioned phenomena are useless. No point, you can't find any satisfaction from any conditioned situation, any conditioned phenomena. Now the mind may recognize another, say, domain which is completely free from conditioned phenomena. It may completely leave grasping, and now it is being in a non-grasping state. So that is the only relief one may has. So to have this non-grasping state develop in the mind, because what you have to grasp is something conditioned.
Currently I am at a stage when the things that I used to enjoy, I have no desire for, and then I'm left with sort of like
worrying.
Fallen down apart.
Uh-huh.
Bottom has fallen out, sort of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what I'm talking about in daily life. So, you know.
Yeah. Now, how about keeping your mind empty?
Empty?
Yeah.
Give me an example, Bhante.
Now, say, say you know exactly, okay, no point of attaching to this, attaching to that. So likewise, you have some understanding. So how mind keep kind of without any kind of a thought, without attaching to any kind of physical things, without associating anything? Did you try that?
No, not specifically like that, but like for instance, you know, even social activities that I used to, even those I don't. So I'm kind of becoming a bit of a recluse. So I don't know whether I'm at a stage when I totally enjoy that. Nor do I enjoy the other. So that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I'm caught between, you know.
Yeah, this
two
is
things right in the middle.
That's understandable, because till you are firmly established on the emptiness, so till mind is not associating anything, till your mind recognize confident in being seclusion, so you feel kind of scattered. You feel that you lost this side and still not available another option, another solution. You feel lost. So that is quite natural. But later, slowly allow the mind to be secluded. Keep the mind peaceful. Keep the mind fairly alone, without allowing it to attach, without allowing it to talk too much, think too much. Then slowly mind may develop its own confidence that it doesn't need anything support.
Right.
So
it has to be done through the mind itself, not with mind.
Exactly. Nothing physical. So your mind now has to have its own confidence being developed. Okay, I don't need anyone else's support. I has my own capacity just to be aware, simply aware about what's going on. There is no place to find footing.
Okay, thank you very much, Pandey. This is very helpful.
Okay,
I will put that correction, much merit to you. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, there's a question coming from this side. Yes,
I wonder, Bhante, would this also present a sort of solution to that state of mind of being kind of stuck? Things like delighting in Dhamma, for example, like the
delighting,
how it said the jhanas are pleasant abiding here and now, or having good kalyanamittas and things. Are these suitable answers as well to that sort of nibbida?
That can be. That will help you to cope up with the situation, but ultimately you yourself have to find the mind itself has to find another solution. Solution in the sense is based on the kind of confidence. Okay, there is nothing to associate. Simple awareness is a birthright available in the mind. It doesn't depend on anything. Now, say for example, assume that you have a skill to look at things. Okay, your eyes are available, those are healthy, you can look at things. Is it a must to have something to look at? If there is nothing is available to look at, does that mean your vision is impaired? Not. The vision is available. You see, the vision is available, but many objects are also available to see. And what has happened was that we being carried away by those different objects what we have looked at. Now, suppose all those objects are disappeared, taken away. It doesn't mean that you can't look or you can't see. The ability to see and your vision is still available. Now you are keeping on trust of that, not on the object. Those objects are coming and going, though they are quite impermanent, vulnerable. So instead of you are paying attention to them, you simply take the responsibility to your hand. Okay, I can see things. So likewise, the mind has the capacity to being aware. So this simple, pure awareness is a kind of a birthright to the mind. It's a kind of an inherent capacity to the mind. Now, rather than we being trying to get satisfaction depending on the external phenomena, now we simply say, keep the mind empty. It doesn't mean empty mind doesn't mean you are unconscious. You are fully aware, fully conscious.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on, you are fully aware. That's all we have. So being, trust in that pure awareness, ultimately. So that is where, so all the, so in, on the other hand, now you have a kind of an equanimity for the all the conditioned phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
So that is why the Sankhara Upekkha Jnana, ultimate, I mean, very much like the end of the Vipassana knowledges. So you are fairly have kind of an equanimous attitude towards all the conditioned phenomena, because you know no point of attaching to them.
Mm-hmm.
But the awareness available in the mind is only what you are endowed with,
mm-hmm.
what you are born with. So you are simply being with that.
And so it's sort of like that is the goal, and things, supporting factors like Kalyana Mittas and Jhanas are more just to prepare for that, rather?
Yeah, that they may prepare the conducive environment.
Mm-hmm.
Jhana actually give a kind of a, say, pre-experience about it.
Right.
So, because now basically preparance for that,
mm-hmm.
because our mind, typically we expect happiness from our children, our mother, our parents, our the economy and all these things.
Mm-hmm.
But that is completely mundane things.
Mm-hmm.
But later through jhana, one may understand, okay, I don't need any of them, still I can be blissful, I can be happy.
Mm-hmm.
Now we are completely looking at a different point of view. So you don't need any of these external physical things, I can have my own inner happiness.
Mm-hmm.
So now you are getting introvert,
mm-hmm.
finding a solution within yourself.
Right.
But still that jhana is conditioned. So it is not yet have the support of the wisdom.
Yeah.
Now later, through vipassana, you are getting a lot of support coming through wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
And there you are finding complete seclusion, not attaching to anything, not grasping anything. So that is another way of, another solution, we can say. So that is ultimately become the kind of one's dwelling place or one's refuge,
mm-hmm.
in one's practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we can move forward, Jennifer.
All right, I'd like to invite Rajita for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer.
Auntie,
can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
My question is about the third category, about seeing the arising, remaining or being present, and the disappearing of feeling, perception, and thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And now in this feeling, it is both feelings of the body and emotions, right?
Yeah, we can say so, yes.
And when it comes to, I can see the perception leading to thought, leading to feeling. If I'm quiet, if I'm in meditation, yes, I can see it, if it arises in my mind. Or if I'm doing something and I'm not talking and the thought arises, I can see it. I can see the emotion arise. But if I'm involved in a conversation, it happens so fast and I cannot see it arise at once again.
Mm-mm.
I may have said something.
Yeah, yeah.
I might, like, if I'm just, say I'm doing some gardening and I see a beautiful rose, I can see it arising. I can see it passing away. I can see the pleasant feeling arising, all that. But if I'm talking with somebody, I might let it go further.
Mm-hmm.
Because I will get how beautiful it looks, so I will not let it arise and pass away.
Mm-hmm.
So what I'm trying to say is, I'm okay seeing arising and passing away if I'm in meditation or if I'm by myself doing something. But if I'm having a conversation or at a meeting, then I'm getting involved.
Mm-hmm.
What can I do about that?
It may slowly give you the capacity. Now, at the beginning, it is difficult. Now, when we are in a constant conversation, so we have to think, we have to talk, we have to look at the other person, we have to understand him. So, likewise, I mean, many things are working in parallel. So, as a result of that, we may not be. Can you hear?
Yes.
Okay. So it, as a result of that, we may not be capable of having this proper perspective. Okay. I'm handling it without getting attached to things. I'm handling it properly with clear comprehension. You still can't do it. Sometimes you're being carried away by what is being said. You're being emotional. But later, slowly, we may develop the skill. So it is, I mean, just so likewise, there are certain activities that we can be fully aware, we know clearly what is going on, we have that fair amount of mindfulness. But on certain activities, the activity itself is quite attractive and requests fair amount of brain power, requests fair amount of our attention. As a result of that, we being lost in the activity.
Yes, if I'm explaining something or if I'm talking about something,
yeah.
I will get very excited about it.
Mm. Yeah.
And get involved.
Exactly.
But you're saying that if I continue with the meditation and the quiet reflection, that it will spill over to the more active one.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Basically, there are certain activities which require a lot of our attention. Now, say for example, you are writing an email in your computer. Probably you are thinking, and it's a kind of a serious letter. Now, probably it grabs your total attention. You are fully in that activity, and even someone is close by is talking to you, you can't hear. Because you are being absorbed to that activity. But on the other hand, suppose you are simply going through a mundane, say you are sweeping the floor. It's a simple activity you are quite used to and it doesn't require a lot of brain power. And now someone else is talking to you, you can immediately understand he is talking to me.
Yes.
Something like that. So, the best way is to have that kind of mindfulness available in each and every activity. I mean, it's difficult. We can say like that, but it's difficult.
Thank you, Manji.
Bante,
we can hear you, but you sound a little bit far away.
Really?
Are you able to get closer to the microphone?
I am fairly closer to the microphone, but I don't know. okay, I think for increase it. Yes. 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 Yeah.
Okay. I'd like to invite Sweeneeta to ask the next question.
Bhante, I was thinking about Vibhavatan, when one realizes the perversion, the vipalasa, you think the body is subha when it is asubha, when you think of the 32 parts, you know, of the body, and then the nitya, you think it's nitya when it's anichai, and the viparinama of the body, the, you know, rupa vedana sanna sankara. Vijnana itself, when you realize the viparinama, the change in nature of everything, and then you realize this is dukkha, and then how can there be anatta? Because if you're not in control of this body, and you can't maintain it the way you want, jatadala vyadimarana, and then you really lose your desire for the body. And therefore, in meditation, you say, then you disconnect with the body, and then you say space is better, or consciousness is better, and you gradually go, you know, to arupa, like desiring the arupa, and that arupa world can that be the vibhavatanha, your desire for that world, leaving the body behind?
Good question. Leaving aside one thing and grasping another thing is not the approach. Temporarily we can do it. So Buddha recommended that to some extent. Idam nissa idam pajahata. So that's a kind of a technique that one can associate. Now say for example, in the Chula Sunyata Sutta, Say, if you have a lot of perceptions, a lot of ideas, thoughts, thinking going on with respect to the city, now once you come to the monastery, so you have to let go of all the city-related activities, thoughts, perceptions, but you need to grasp what is activities, perception with respect to the monastery. It's a kind of a practical advice what we can take. Now say, now you are start practicing the meditation, now you are trying to be aware of only your body. You are using body as a mechanism to abandon all the thoughts, perceptions, at thinking with respect to the monastery. It has a purposeful value, practical value. Now you only know about the body. Now later you know only a particular element. Say you are practicing elements meditation, you know exactly what is present right now. It may be the hardness, it may be the softness. Now you are fully aware of a particular element. Now you don't know much about the other elements. So basically the perception about the body has completely disappeared. Only one type of perception is available, that is with respect to the particular element. So likewise Buddha mentioned, so you may grasp one thing, you may use one thing in order to abandon a large gross something else. So always we may use something refined in order to abandon, in order to let go of something more gross. But this process has to continue. I mean, as you said, probably you may be grasping arupa in order to abandon rupa, but later you need to abandon arupa as well. So that is where Buddha talks about the atammeta. So ultimately you can't grasp anything. Nothing is worthy of grasping. Sabbe dhamma nalang abhinivesai. There is nothing worth of adhering to, nothing worth of grasping.
And I was actually thinking, Bhante, that Vibhava Tanha is that desire to go into the Arupa world. But then when you do Vipassana, you realize even the Arupa world is impermanent.
Yeah, yeah.
And that also will not last.
Exactly.
And then you realize Nibbana is the only way out.
Yeah.
And you contemplate more on the Nibbana.
Yes, yes. Yeah, exactly. So that is why, I mean, Arupa, there also does not mean really that Arupa realm or Arupa Jhana, rather you abandon all the physical things and you are coming to very much like Chittanupassana, Dhammanupassana and keeping the mind empty. So that can have some characteristics common with the Arupa Jhana. So this explained in the Salayatana Vibhanga Sutta, where the mind is basically empty and very much like the attention is pervaded, very much like across the whole universe. So it doesn't have any boundary. So it has certain characteristics of Arupa Jhana. But it is also doing for a purpose. It is not that one is trying to absorb to that. One is trying to grasp that. It is using as a mechanism to recognize subtle defilements. To recognize how eye-making, mind-making, eye-conceit happens. And as a result of that, all this eye-making, mind-making is abandoned. Hope you got it.
I suppose, even the Arupa world, if you die at that moment, if you're in a jhana and you die at that time, you end up in maybe the Brahma realm.
Mm-hmm.
So that is also impermanent. You can end up 84,000 yons and then probably go straight back to hell.
Mm-hmm.
One has not become a sotapanna or
whatever.
So I suppose it just shows that nothing is permanent except Nibbana, the original, isn't it?
Yeah.
The same should be Nibbana.
Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante. I believe that's the last question for today.
Okay, fine. So actually, I like to add, so basically it's not the solution that we are trying to recognize Arupa realm as the solution. Rather, it may one pursue temporarily as a temporary abiding, but later one has to abandon that and recognize all the defilements, how it is conditioned in the mind. And ultimately we have to have kind of an unconditioned mind, the state of mind in an unconditioned, so that may be taken as the refuge. So with that we can conclude today's sutta. Yeah.
Thank you, Bhante.
Can I ask one quick question?
Yeah, one quick question from this side, yes.
sorry, Mante, last portion that we were discussing of that kind of gradual letting go, it reminds me, is this a suitable kind of simile? I've heard it from one teacher. It's kind of like in the same way that one uses like the railing on a staircase. Like you still hold on to it while you're walking up.
Exactly.
And so this refers to the different things like your teachers, Sangha, and different practices, and then gradually as you let go more and more,
exactly,
then you can finally release your hands more and more from the railing.
Exactly.
Once you're on that stable ground of like, finished.
Very true. It's very much like climbing on a ladder.
Right.
So you need that rails in order to get into the top ladder, top rail, and you need to let go of the lower rail.
Yes.
So you can't simply grasp lower rail in order to go to the upper rail.
Mm-hmm.
So you're doing it for purpose, and later you need to abandon that, you need to let go of that. So ultimately nothing is there to grasp.
Mm-hmm.
But in the process, in the whole journey, here and there we may grasp, probably a support of a Kalyanamitta, probably the support of the Dhamma, probably support of the teaching. So likewise, there may be little things that we may have to grasp, because still we are not confident, still we are not fully free. So when the mind is completely free, there is nothing to grasp, there is nothing to hold, there is nothing to take anything as something useful. So mind has its own capacity to liberate. So, I mean, it's a very interesting path, actually, very interesting path. That's why Buddha mentioned, I mean, so you can't immediately abandon everything.
Mm-hmm.
So thinking that, okay, ultimately I'm going to abandon everything,
yes,
without
so right
having
now,
the capacity
actually,
right now, it's no point.
Yes.
Now, suppose you have to climb to a topmost floor of the particular building. You have a very tall ladder. And you know, ultimately, I don't need the ladder. Once you are up in the hill, up in the building.
Yes.
So right now, but right now you're on the ground.
Mm-hmm. Cannot just teleport.
Exactly. So you can't throw away the ladder, because ladder is the path that is helping you to climb to the topmost floor. Once you reach topmost floor, probably you can abandon ladder.
Mm-hmm.
But till that, you need to have some support.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. So actually, we can relate this to, you know, the Ratavinita Sutta.
Yes.
One type of practice helps to achieve another type of practice.
Mm-hmm.
And that, when you are cultivate, helps you to reach another level of practice.
Mm-hmm.
Once you practice that, you are capable of developing another level of practice.
Right.
Like that, it's a kind of a process, continuous process, that we are abandoning and reaching a more refined state.
Amen.
Yeah,
one
yeah. One after the other. Okay, with that we'll conclude today's sutta teaching, and whatever the merits that we have accumulated, we'll share with all the celestial beings, all the past level relatives, and whoever in need of merits. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path, fruition, nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ittavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahindika anumoditva chirang rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahindika punyantam anumoditva chirang rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha deva naga mahindika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkantu mamparam. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idam vo nyatinam hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. ඉමිනා පුඤ්ඤකම්මේන මාමේ බාල සමාගමෝ සතං සමාගමෝ හෝතු යාව නිබ්බාන පත්තියා සාදු සාදු සාදු